Welcome to the Ivy Tech Podcast, powered by the MBA Tech Club here at the Ivy School of Business. I'm Sam Sim, MBA class of 2021. Today, we're talking about how new MBA grads can get into product management. Our guest is Jonathan Lau. He's an MBA 2016 alumni and has been a product manager at both Instacart and Loblaw Digital. Jonathan is currently teaching the Introduction to Product Management Bootcamp course at General Assembly. You'll hear him talk about the five ways that he sees MBAs get into product management, tips on how to tackle product cases, and finally, advice on determining which product management opportunities are the right fit for you. All right, let's get started. Welcome, Jonathan.
Thanks for having me. How are you doing?
I'm doing well. We're excited to chat. Where do we find you today?
Now, I'm currently in downtown Toronto, where I've spent the last 4 years since graduating from Ivy. I do have plans to move to Vancouver in December to work remotely and kind of, you know, enjoy the snowboarding that's going on over there. So, but at the moment, I'm in Toronto.
Awesome. Well, before we talk about your time at Ivy, I like to start out the podcast by asking our guests what they were doing prior to going back to school. So can you talk about where you were working and what you were doing before you went to pursue your MBA?
Yeah, sure. I'd love to. So in terms of my background, I actually did an undergrad in electrical engineering at Waterloo. And after graduation, I actually worked in very, you know, a wide range of industries, ranging from insurance to architecture. I even did a bit of consulting in Missouri. And ultimately, I found my home as a software project manager for a small healthcare education company. You know, spent a few great years there and then realized, you know what, I want to expand my breadth of knowledge. And I had not taken any business courses in high school or university. So why not go to Ivy and learn something new?
And once you were at Ivy, I'm sure you went through the process that everyone goes through, which is you're trying to figure out what the heck you want to do after you graduate. Can you talk about what types of industries and roles did you explore and whether or not technology was always your top target?
That's a really good question. I think technology has always been a core part of who I am. So I knew that I want to kind of stay in that realm of things. And to be honest, when I applied for school and got in, I actually had no idea what I wanted to do coming out of it. I figured I'd enjoy the ride and figure it along the way. But I did kind of hitch my cart to a certain horse just to be on a certain track. And that was consulting. I was interested in marketing as well, but I did go down the consulting track. And that was very helpful in preparing for a career in product.
Yeah, it's interesting that you mentioned you went down the consulting route because I think a lot of students can relate to that journey. But ultimately, after you graduated, you ended up taking a product manager role instead of going into consulting. So I'd love to understand, how did you know that product management was actually the right fit for you?
So that's an interesting question as well, because truth be told, I didn't even know what product management was while I was attending Ivy. And you'll find that this is the case with a lot of product managers, which is they'll accidentally find themselves in that role. For me, after doing a bit of research, I love the idea that product management is the intersection between business, technology, and design. And personally, I index very heavily on design and data. So it just seemed like a role that would really, really interest me.
I like how you use this example of a trifecta of business, design, and technology. I also find it interesting that you indexed more highly on the design and technology side, because my assumption would be that most MBA students actually index more highly on the business side. So in your opinion, how do you recommend students who may not have as much design or technology experience actually become comfortable with those two aspects of product management?
Mm-hmm. And to comment on that, when you're starting out, being a generalist is very important. Obviously, as you get more years, eventually you might find your niche and really add depth to a certain area. But to start off, being a generalist is very helpful. With me, I've been very fortunate that I have that engineering base. So to have a base in one of the three areas to start, that's great. And then you can augment it by adding a bit more to address those other aspects. You don't need to be a pro at it, but you want to be, you know, have, you know, some competency, kind of understand the key terms and how things work in those other aspects of product management.
I think it's a good time for us to shift and talk about your first role right after graduating. That was at an advertising technology startup called iReturn Marketing here in Toronto, and you joined as a product manager. I'm curious, how did you find out about the opportunity? And what did you do to position yourself in order to land an interview there?
Okay. Well, I'll have to admit that landing my first product management role was very much an accident. This company had approached me about being a project manager. And I actually told them I was interested in the operations management role posted on the careers page, because at the time I was interviewing for consulting. It was almost graduation time and I hadn't landed anything yet. And I didn't know how long I wanted to be unemployed looking for a job. I have, not to scare anyone, but I had one classmate wait up to a year till after graduation, but he finally nailed that consulting gig. So for me, I was like, you know what, let's look at operations management as well and see if that's something I'd like to do. And speaking with this company, they told me, well, if you take on this open product management role, we could switch you over to operations after 6 months. Now, that never happened, but the rest is history. And to be completely honest, I didn't do anything special for the interview or anything like that. I just use a lot of what I learned at Ivy, such as doing company research and networking.
That's interesting. So can you talk about what the actual interview process was like? I ask because oftentimes when people talk about product management interviews, they compare it to consulting, not in the content, but in the fact that it's an unnatural way of a job interview, or at least the way people think about a job interview. So what was your process like? How many rounds did you go through? What did they ask you?
I'm going to preface this by saying that I find that the big tech firms in the US have a certain style, and Toronto tech firms often have a variation of the style. And overall, it's very similar to consulting interviews, but I find cases more fun. So what I'm actually going to do is share an example of how many interviews are conducted based on my experience interviewing with Wayfair, Facebook, Google, and other firms. So typically, the interview process starts off with a phone screen. Then it's followed by a behavioral interview, often with a hiring manager. And from there, you might do multiple case interviews ranging from product sense to product design to product strategy. After that, sometimes you may have a tech interview with an engineer, and sometimes you'll have a cultural fit interview. So that kind of summarizes the general interview process you'll see with big tech firms.
One of the interview rounds that you just mentioned is something that I often hear students bring up as being the most intimidating part of a product management interview. And that's when they ask you questions like, how would you build a new Zoom product for universities? And you have to walk them through your process. And at the end of it, you come out with some sort of product recommendation. How would you recommend students prepare for something like that?
Yeah, that's a question that I feel is very important for a lot of folks. And just so people aren't scared by this, many firms don't have a technical component. Only a few firms do. And certain firms like Google, they might index more heavily on the technical side. But for other firms, they might do a more high-level interview to ask about how you work with engineers, how you communicate with them, how you prioritize. So it's really different across the board depending on the company. Now, using Google as an example, they have a more tech-focused tech interview. And like I mentioned before, I'm an engineer. I was an engineer. I programmed in my younger days in school, not career-wise. So I did have to brush up on my data structure and algorithms for my Google interview. In general, companies just want to know that you have a high-level understanding of the technical architecture and can communicate with technical folks. So as long as you can kind of do that, then you're set. And if you don't have any programming experience, I really recommend picking up doing a programming course, an object-oriented programming course, so just Java. And that should give you a good enough base to at least enter these interviews without being totally lost. So that's what I suggest. And of course, do a lot of your own research to understand the difference between, you know, what's front-end and back-end, and you know, what's a server, what's a database, and how do those Lego pieces come together? They're not expecting you to develop anything or program anything yourself. They just want to know that you're able to communicate.
One of the things that I've tried, if you don't mind me sharing, is making friends with a software engineer. And I did this at my work because I was, before going back to school, considering pivoting into product management. And I went up to some engineers and just made friends with them and told them what I was doing and asked if I could meet with them on a semi-regular basis just to ask them some of these questions that I would get tested on during a product management interview. And I think that's a really accessible option for a lot of people because you either know someone at your work or a software engineer through friends or family that can meet with you and give you an opportunity to get comfortable with some of these technical concepts that they're going to ask you during the interviews.
Yeah. And you hit on a great point, which is networking is very important, whether it's to work on your career or anything else like that. I do want to mention one more thing, if you don't mind, which is regarding the cases, because I did mention before that a lot of the product cases are similar to consulting cases. So one might ask, well, what are the similarities and differences? So I'd say that for cases, product cases, they want the candidate to take a vague problem and focus it. And they want you to come up with creative solutions. And after you come up with these creative solutions, you filter and justify what solution or solutions you'd like to choose. And this is really different from consulting, which often requires you to hit kind of key insights to pass the interviews. So I personally find it a relief that I don't have to do that. And I enjoy product cases a lot more. And I find I do better in them when compared to consulting. In terms of preparing for the cases themselves, if you haven't already, you want to check out books like Decode, Cracking the PM Interview. There is a great website called Stellar Peers, which you can learn a lot of the tips and tricks and also find interview partners. I'm going to plug my website, which is really incomplete right now, but you can see one of my General Assembly talks there. It's www.pmcareercoach.com. And those are some of the things you can do to prepare for the interviews.
I want to move forward and talk about product management certificate programs at organizations like the one you teach at, General Assembly. Do you recommend students take these supplementary courses? And if you do, what do you suggest they do in order to get the most value out of that experience?
To answer that question, I think it's good to take a step back first and kind of address the question of, if you want to get into product management and you currently have little to no experience, how do you get into product management? As I mentioned earlier, many experienced PMs will tell you that they entered the industry by accident. And there is a catch-22 because companies look for PMs with experience, but if you can't land a job, how do you develop that experience? So I kind of think of five things in terms of breaking in. A popular one is doing an internal pivot. So you can enter and do a different role in the company, such as, you know, product ownership, project management, product design, you know, any kind of those roles, or even like CSM, and then pivot internally. Another great way is to make sure to do your networking and coffee chats and go through referrals into companies. You can definitely apply to APM programs if you're familiar with that at all. It's the Associate Product Management Program. Toronto has a great one that's put together by a bunch of companies, but in the Valley, each company or many companies have their own dedicated APM program that only applies for them. And it is geared towards people who have never done product management before. And more or less, you do the interview, you land the job. So you'll do your product management job, but they'll also provide you with formal training throughout the week outside of work hours. You can also get in via tech consulting or consulting in general. A lot of companies really love consultants. And I'd say the final one is being a subject matter expert. So if you're someone who's an expert in AI or machine learning, the truth is no other product manager is going to understand the space better than you. So who better to lead that product than someone who has that kind of experience? So that's what I'd say in terms of getting in with no experience. Now, in terms of, you know, whether you should take a course or not, at the end of the day, I have to say that, you know, the more gaps you can fill, the better your chance of getting your foot in the door. And those gaps can either be in business, tech, or design. In this case, I don't think the business is going to be a problem. I've spoken to some recruiters before, and they did mention that if you do take a bootcamp or certificate in product management, it signals to companies that you are serious about product management. So that is a plus. You know, even though I'm a PM, I'm constantly updating my skills. I recently finished a front-end web dev course via LinkedIn Learning, and now I'm doing the free Google Analytics course through Google Academy. So the more gaps you can fill, the more marketable you'll become at the end of the day.
I want to highlight two of the five options that you just described, the first one being the internal pivot. I think that's a really great option for a lot of MBA students, but knowing that many of them aren't going to have design or technical experience, one of the ones I just heard was customer success manager. But what are some of the other options that you've observed your peers with business backgrounds be successful in terms of pivoting to product management?
So I kind of focus on the three roles that I've seen a lot while working at tech companies. The first one being project management. You know, it's a stone's throw away from product management. And there are a lot of differences, but there are similarities as well. So starting off as a project manager is a great way to pivot into a product management role. And next is customer success management. For that, that's kind of the connecting piece with the end customers. So really understanding from a business perspective what they desire. And being in that kind of role, you really focus on the business and client side of things. So that's another role that has become very popular that people should look at. And of course, depending on the company, you might have business or trading managers, which was very popular at Loblaws Digital. And I have seen a trade manager pivot over and become a product manager. So at the end of the day, it's all about getting in the company first and really taking initiative to get involved in things outside of your designated role. And, you know, if they're product related things, then great. But taking that initiative and showing your interest, a lot of times will pay dividends, because if you're a good worker, a company values you and wants to keep you. And you might be the first in line for when they need to hire from within or promote someone within to a product management role.
Yeah, that seems to be a recurring piece of advice that I hear from a lot of product managers about customer facing roles being a great avenue to start in and then pivot into being a PM. And it makes sense, because if you're going to design a product or a feature, it is an asset to have that deep understanding of the pain points of your customer and what they value and how they live. It makes a lot of sense to me. Before we move on, can you explain what a trade manager is? Is that an operations role?
So at Loblaws Digital, the trading team was basically the team that handled anything business related. So they would look at, you know, the health, the P&L of the company. They would handle things like the catalog, working with vendors and merchants to figure out what products to put on the site. They would even work on things like optimizing a site in the sense of, you know, analyzing some of the data and seeing where the opportunities are. So, you know, as I'm explaining this, some of this stuff actually already leaks into product management. So there's a bit of overlap there. This role, I think, was more specific to Loblaws Digital, but at every company, I'm sure there's some kind of business function or role that you'd be able to look at.
Let's talk about that last option you mentioned for business students to get into product management, and that's being an expert in topics like AI or machine learning. I think for most business students, or at least I can speak for myself, we're not necessarily going to have a deep understanding of those heavy technical topics, at least not enough to make us an expert. But what we will have is strong institutional knowledge, whether that be from an industry that we've worked in before or in a role that we have a lot of experience in. How would you recommend students package that attractively to an employer to give them the confidence that they're a good fit for a product management role?
You don't have to be a technical subject matter expert. There's a lot of other things too. For example, you could be from banking or the finance industry and you understand certain aspects of finance very well. So that makes you very well suited for fintech, which is a pretty big industry in Toronto. If let's say you were a hardware engineer, you did mechanical engineering or something that's more physical, then you can look at companies that build physical products. Because I know at the end of the day, they really look for those skills when trying to hire a product manager, because I've applied to some of those roles and flat out got rejected before, right? Even with my experience. So that really shows you how important sometimes you're being a subject matter expert is. In terms of really signaling to companies that you're a good fit, it just comes down to showing that you're someone who's smart and bright, that can communicate, you have, you know, transferable skills, and that you're someone and it goes back to some of the things you talked about earlier, is that, you know, you, if you have a business background, are you good with data, right? Are you able to parse insights from data? Are you able to learn things quickly? So those are a few things, you know, I know I threw a bunch of things out there, but those are a few things that I would consider when marketing yourself to companies.
Let's move forward and talk about the difference between project management and product management. Since you've done both, you're the perfect person to ask. In your opinion, what are the biggest differences between the two functions?
So I'd say the main difference first when it comes to project management versus product management is that you no longer operate within the boundaries set by others. You have the opportunity to define them. That's typically the easiest way to think about it. As for surprising, I'd say that many companies mislabel their project management roles as product management. So make sure your researcher target company very carefully and understand the deliverables for their particular product management role. And to add to that as well, often I'll ask about the team structure when I'm interviewing to understand what composes the team. And a key one to ask is, do you have a scrum master or a project manager? And if not, what percentage of the time is spent doing the project management duties? Obviously, you're always going to be doing some of that stuff. But if a company tells you that 80% of the job is project management, then it might raise a few red flags. Now, that being said, if you're trying to get your foot in the door, you know, it's just something that you might have to do to kind of get in and get that experience. And, you know, then it opens a lot of doors for you afterwards.
I want to talk about product road mapping for a little bit. So for individuals who are first getting into product management, I often hear that one of the most difficult things is developing this muscle of figuring out what to build. Can you talk about how you've approached building that skill set of product road mapping?
That is a very good question and also a very complex question. Every company tackles roadmaps and objectives very differently. Sometimes it's more top down and sometimes it's more bottom up. And part of your company research is to find out how they operate and whether it resonates with the way you like to do work. But in general, a lot of companies will have what they called OKRs, objectives and key results. And basically it might be something like in the next quarter, in Q2, we want to, increase revenue by 20%. And that gives you kind of a guiding direction or even a North Star. I have some colleagues that hate that term, but it gives you a direction on how to look at your backlog and figure out, you know, which ideas will help you hit that target. And of course, on top of that, it's good to be familiar with metrics and KPIs, so key performance indicators, so that you understand, you know, what are the numbers that indicate whether I'm hitting these targets or not. And at the same time, the more familiar you are with KPIs, it makes your job that much easier. And also, it's an important skill to have when it comes to being a product manager.
What are some of the key success metrics that we should be aware of? I know there are your obvious ones like daily or monthly active users, churn rate, signup rate. But if someone was trying to build up that vocabulary, what are some of the other key success metrics they should know?
So once again, this really depends on your product and the industry you're in. When it comes to companies, you can look at a company with a product in kind of three phases, right? I'm sure you've heard of this. You have the MVP or launch stage, so the 0 to 1 phase. And then phase two, it's more about growth. And then once you've kind of hit your numbers and you're steady, it's about optimization at that point. And of course, depending on which phase you are, you'll bring up different types of metrics. An acronym that you can use, have you ever heard of something called pirate metrics?
No, I haven't.
So pirate metrics is represented by AARRR. And let's see if I can actually remember what those things stand for. It's a great way to kind of segment your metrics when you're doing your product management. And I believe the first A is acquisition. The second A is activation. So that's like when you get a customer is downloading your app, how many of them actually sign up? Then R is retention. Another R is referral, and the final R is revenue. So that's a great place to start in determining your metrics, because those are like the umbrella terms. In terms of my own experience working in the grocery industry, basket size is a very common one, GMV, and abandonment rates. For me, I have a lot of experience in checkouts. So I'll look at things like cart abandonment and checkout abandonment.
Since we're on the topic of metrics, I've often heard that in a job interview, one of the things that you shouldn't be doing is giving generic metrics as a way of measuring success for the solution that you put forward. So for example, let's say they ask you a question about building a new feature, and at the very end, they want to know how you're going to measure the success of it. And you say, we're going to look at the daily active users. I've heard that that's not a great response. That's considered a very mediocre response during an interview. So I'm curious, in your experience, how do you approach the metrics question with an interviewer?
It's not so much that you shouldn't share generic metrics, but it's more so they want to know that if you truly understand if the metric you're using will answer kind of the hypothesis you have or the question you're trying to answer. Because sometimes metrics can be a red herring. So use an example would be if you are the product manager for a website and you're looking at user growth, you know, your first inclination is, okay, well, let's look at the number of users that visit the site. And there's 100 users this week, and next week there are 200 visitors visiting. That's great. That's a 2x growth. But in reality, when you dig a bit deeper, you have to understand that what's important about users is the number of unique users, right? Visitors from the same IP, because in that second week with 200 users, what if it's only 90 unique users? It's just a bunch of them had visited multiple times. So it's important to make that distinction. Another example would be if you're looking at checkout abandonment, as we call it. So it's the number of people who go into the checkout process and they're filling out their address, their payment, all that kind of information and checking out. And you're just looking at the top number, which is, 20% of people entering or leaving. Well, yes, that tells you something, but it doesn't truly tell you at which point are your users facing friction, at which point are people leaving. And if you start diving into the numbers, you'll kind of notice that, it actually turns out that it's the payment step where, 80% of people get to that step are dropping out, and all the other steps, it's, less than 10%. I don't know if that averages out to 20%, but you kind of get my point. And I think more importantly is when you think about metrics, you want to think about it in depth, right? And think about whether your current metric really answers the question. And not only are you looking at specific metrics, you want to think about things like date ranges and timeframes, because one thing to look at is you can, let's say the weekend just passed and your sales for whatever reason just jumped up, 2x. And once again, one thing you should look at is, let's look at every other weekend. How does these numbers compare? Let's look at last year. Is there a pattern going on that we don't know about? Like, is it Black Friday or Cyber Monday? It's you got to look a bit deeper to really truly glean the right insight, because if you're too high level, people might be skeptical about your understanding of analytics.
I like that you're bringing up this idea of having an innate curiosity, because it sounds like one of the things that you need in order to be a good product manager is just having this interest in digging deep on why something is happening, or why are people using something in a particular way.
I'll have to say that being a curious person has helped me, and being a curious PM will help you be very successful. And this is something they teach in project management as well, is to always ask why, right? To get to the core of the problem. Because at the end of the day, you don't want to be solving the wrong problem. When it comes to tech companies nowadays, you want to be agile, right? You want to do things quickly. And as that popular saying goes, you want to fail fast so that if it's the wrong decision, you'll know immediately and can make the right decision, as opposed to building or working on something for a year and then finding out that there's no market fit. And that can be very devastating for companies, especially if you work for a startup.
Since you've worked at high growth startups, you've worked at an innovation arm in a larger company as a product manager, and you've also worked in big tech, I have to ask, if you were to advise students thinking about which of the three they should target right after school, what would be some of the advice you would give them in order to make the right decision for them?
It really comes down to how you work best and where you see yourself long term. Because working at a large company means stability, it could mean a brand name, and it could mean that they have the adequate funding and you don't have to worry about the company going under in the next month. or two. But big companies can come with more management layers and more red tape. Now, working at a startup or small company comes with financial risks, which I talked about earlier, which is you don't know if it's going to be afloat in the next few months. But the other side is the positive side is that you get the opportunity to wear many hats, and you might even get equity that can really pay off at the end of the day. Imagine getting in the ground floor at Facebook or something, right? You know, the bigger names you have on your resume, it makes you more attracted, makes you more of an attractive candidate for future roles, but you might not get the same in-depth experience of working at a startup. And with that said, I do kind of want to segue and share a little bit about, let's say, the big firms like Google and Facebook, because I know that those are hot companies that everyone wants to work for. So when it comes to FAANG companies, I'd say that ideally they look for previous experience when it comes to product managers. However, a lot of companies do have what we call the APM program, which I talked about earlier. That's the Associate Product Management Program. And they expect that the people joining that program will not have much or any experience. So that's something you want to look at if you're looking at the FAANG companies. On the other side, I know that some folks, I've seen folks who don't have big names on the resume, but they have great work experience from startups or smaller companies, and they've made it into Google or Facebook. And especially if you start your own company, even better. they love entrepreneurs and people who've owned their own companies. Like recently, I coached a former colleague who made it into Facebook. And even on his resume, he didn't even list Instacart. And that was because the company we had worked for was acquired by Instacart, and he didn't feel right at the time to put Instacart on his resume. But despite that, he made it into Facebook, you know, during this tough period. Really proud of him. And that really goes to show that you don't need to work for big companies to make in these companies, into these FAANG companies. And one more piece of advice, if you're targeting Google or Facebook, is make sure you network with folks who already work there, because using Google as an example, once you're in the interview process, they do require internal referrals for you to kind of get past a certain point in the process. So knowing people there will be very helpful.
I want to talk about joining a startup specifically. As you know, there are many different flavors of startups. You have your Series A or seed round companies that are very early stage. And then you have your later stage startups with hundreds of employees and millions of dollars in funding. What would be your advice on navigating the startup ecosystem? And perhaps you can take the lens of Canada specifically, since most people listening will be thinking about the Canadian market. But what would be your advice on navigating that ecosystem and figuring out what would be the right startup for you?
That is a tough question, because it will be different depending on the individual and what your risk tolerance is. I mean, at the end of the day, with any startup, it comes down to how much you believe in that product, right? If it's something, it could be a really small company in very early stages, but if it's something that you really stand behind, then it might be worth that risk. For me, I think what's been very helpful when I do research is to use the website Crunchbase, if you're familiar with that one, because it'll list a lot of information regarding companies, especially startups. It'll tell you what series of funding they're in, how much money they've raised, who are their important people in the organization, what news exists about their company. So it's a great resource to learn more about companies. I think the Mars community in Toronto is very great for learning about startups. A lot of great startups are part of that, you know, that organization. And a lot of times they'll do open houses, right? Or they'll have, you know, networking events. So attending those and talking to people at the booths can be very helpful in learning. And that kind of segues into what's really important is do your networking and coffee chat and speak to people who work in these companies, especially if you can talk to kind of the head honchos, the people at the top, because it'll really give you an idea of what the leadership is like, what the communication style is, if it's someone you'll get along with when working with them. And I think at the end of the day, that's more important than anything, right? Is enjoying the people you're working with and enjoying their style. Because at the end of the day, I know that everyone at Ivy is very bright and talented, and doing work will not be an issue. It's just a matter of, is that the culture that you want to be in?
I loved your point about reaching out to people at a startup and trying to grab 15 or 20 minutes of their time to talk to them about what it's like working there. Just speaking from personal experience, having worked at an early stage startup myself, I can tell you that We definitely don't get as many LinkedIn messages as people who work at larger tech companies. So it's much easier to get in touch with someone at an earlier stage startup. I find in Canada, anyways, people are very open to meeting with new people and talking about their experience at the startup they're working at. So great advice. Throughout the podcast, you've mentioned some questions you should be asking during product management interviews, but I do want to spend some time talking about it now. What are some of the questions you've asked during interviews that you found have been helpful?
As you mentioned, you should always have at least one question at the end of interviews. It really kind of, you know, caps things off and it shows your interests. Of course, if you have any questions lined up, ask those, right? Don't throw away those questions for other ones. But generally, I like to ask them if there's something in the news that's very interesting about the company that I want to learn more about, or I'm curious about how they tackle a certain problem, I'll bring that up. Sometimes they'll ask me interview questions and see how I tackle a problem. And I'll once again, flip it back and ask them, you know, how are you dealing with that problem right now internally? And it's more so for my own learning to see how differently I think from them. One of the questions I really like to ask, which I think they teach in Ivy as well, which is asking them about what their biggest pain point is. Because sometimes they'll reveal something that didn't come up during the interview and you might actually have an opinion or some experience or something to bring up in regards to that pain point. So it's a great opportunity to kind of sell yourself as well. I'll share a personal question I like to ask. It's a bonus, but I'll ask, it's a variation of the culture question. You never want to follow up, just ask, what is the culture of your company? Because at the end of the day, that's a lazy question. You can do your research yourself online and find that information on Glassdoor, what have you. But typically I'll ask them, you know, what is something that surprised you about your company's culture that isn't readily available online through, you know, Glassdoor, LinkedIn, or any kind of review site? What is something that surprised you once you start working there? And sometimes you'll learn something that is totally surprising that you wouldn't have found with your own research. And I find that that question goes over very well.
If you don't mind me sharing, I'll talk about one that I've found has been really helpful. I'll ask hiring managers to think about the individuals they've hired that have done really well and to talk about why they believe those people were so successful. And I think that question helps you get a lens into what the hiring manager values, what type of behaviors and skill sets that person that you're going to work so closely with is going to want to see in a potential hire or potential person on their team. So I've personally found it very helpful.
Wow, that's actually an amazing question. I think that's very important. And even from a career growth perspective as well, which makes me think of another question or questions that you probably want to make sure you hit during the course of the interview. And it kind of brings everything full circle, which is really deep dive into their product leadership and product processes, right? Understand how they do prioritization, right? How they do road mapping, you know, how they vet ideas, or do they speak with customers and things like that? Because the more you learn about the process, the more you understand whether this is a product-driven organization and whether it's something that you'd enjoy doing on a daily basis.
One last question before we go. Now that you have all this knowledge about product management, if you were to think back to your MBA self when you were in the program, what would you advise yourself to be doing during the fall winter time to best prepare themselves to land product management interviews and be successful at them?
So there would be a few things I would do. And I think we covered a lot of those during the course of this chat. I'd say that, you know, take a product management course or bootcamp, take a development course, and maybe even a design course. There's a lot of free or cheap courses available online. And that's to, like I said before, fill in the gaps and become more of a generalist. Look for MBA-related postings with the big companies, like the FAANG companies, right? Especially look for internships or even roles that specifically look for MBA new grads, which I've seen before on Google. Also look into the APM program, which I mentioned before. I think the Toronto one is apmtoronto.com. So that's a great resource. Make sure you do your network and coffee chats, because most folks I personally know in the product industry have landed the roles through this avenue. And to cap it off, look into the following resources, which I mentioned earlier, which is Decode, Cracking the PM Interview, stellar peers. And I'm just going to plug my website, which is super incomplete, but I think it might be useful, pmcareercoach.com.
And with that, I want to say thank you so much, Jonathan. I really enjoyed our conversation today.
Awesome. Thanks for having me. It was a pleasure.
And that's a wrap on this week's episode. I hope you enjoyed it. Special thanks to Jay Deverett and Mihir Radij, my fellow Tech Club execs. And thank you to our career management advisor, Patty Guzzo. And if you enjoyed this episode, feel free to leave us a review on Apple Podcasts or Spotify. We'll be back next week with another interview.